Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
Companion animal legislation, a once rare event in our society, now occurs routinely. It's tempting to say that it occurs because politicians have become more caring and concerned about dog and cat welfare than in the past. But although that may be true in some cases, I don't believe that this explains the phenomena entirely. What makes me think other factors may come into play is the timing of this legislation, or rather the media reports of the legislation. It seems like interest increases in election years. That would make sense, especially when the political scene has become so contentious. Approaching elections may find politicians discovering their once secure seats aren't quite so secure. Meanwhile, their challengers may be scrambling to gain positive media exposure any way they can. Those in both groups may seek to woo previously ignored voting blocs. For sure, there is no shortage of dog and cat lovers in this country, and they conceivably outnumber the dog or cat owners, of whom there are millions. There even are formulas you can use to calculate the number of these owners in a specific community or state. I suspect that every PR-savvy member of a political campaign knows exactly where to find this information. Additionally, many dog and cat lovers feel passionately about animals. When passions run high regarding any subject, the probability increases that those who hold such views will rank as single-issue voters. These folks may feel so strongly about a single issue that if a candidate shares that same concern, they may overlook all kinds of problems with the candidate as well as with the legislation. Using the current multiple proposals for laws that would force pet stores only to offer shelter rescue dogs as an example, what kinds of things should savvy voters be on the lookout for? One, there's a really big difference between proposed legislation and past legislation. The fact that Senator Foghorn proposes some seemingly animal-friendly legislation doesn't mean much. Or rather, it doesn't mean much unless his reason for doing so advances animal welfare. But if he proposes it for some reason unrelated to that, such as to help ensure his reelection, then you better check out what else he supports before you vote for him. You don't want to wind up with shelter dogs in pet stores and a toxic waste dump in your neighborhood. Two, how does Foghorn's legislation propose to enforce his new law? Although logic says it would be stupid to waste the money writing and passing legislation that lacks provisions for enforcing it, there's no shortage of such legislation floating around out there in the legislative abyss. Relative to marketing only shelter or rescue dogs through pet stores, three kinds of enforcement are needed. Someone needs to ensure that all pet stores comply with the new law. Someone must ensure public safety when these animals are present. And someone must guarantee the fulfillment of any special needs these animals may have. Unlike animals from breeders or mills, who come from known and often regulated sources and arrive with known histories, whose early lives were stable, if not necessarily ideal, Rescue shelter animals may come from highly varied and even chaotic backgrounds, about which little is known. Consequently, putting them in cages and exposing them to public scrutiny 8 to 12 hours a day would be inhumane unless adequate safeguards were in place. The third consideration is linked to the second. Does the legislation provide funding to properly enforce it? Providing funds to police up pet stores and provide proper oversight by knowledgeable people to ensure these animals' welfare and public safety will cost money. Who will pay for it? While single-issue voters may be happy to, others may see upgrading the schools or infrastructure as a more important place to invest limited public funds. However, the final consideration is the most important one. Will this animal legislation address the fundamental problem, or does it seek avoiding to do so? The bills seeking to replace purebred dogs from other sources with rescue and shelter animals in pet stores represents the latest volley in the ongoing battle to avoid dealing with a fundamental human problem. The unwillingness of individuals, communities, state and local governments to address pet overpopulation in a meaningful and ecologically sound manner. Instead of mandating stiff fines for those who won't license and secure their animals, and those municipalities who don't enforce existing animal control laws in a meaningful way, we have legislation popping up that attempts to force the animal-loving public to assume this responsibility for irresponsible human behavior. And when well-meaning but naive animal lovers do this, they can become part of the problem instead of its solution. Think about it. Why should any area whose residents or governing bodies don't want to ante up the resources to institute and properly enforce a viable animal control program, why should they do that if others are willing to take their excess animals off their hands? And when this short-sighted approach results in more unwanted animals flooding the market, how do laws that attempt to force the public to ignore other sources of dogs and purchase or adopt these animals solve this fundamental problem? It doesn't. I'm not so naive that I believe all dogs and cats that come from breeders or puppy mills are superior to shelter and rescue animals. But I'm not so naive that I believe that all shelter rescue dogs are superior to those from other sources either. Nor am I a fan of offering dogs and cats of any age for sale, adoption, in pet stores, shopping malls, state fairs, parking lots, or other high-stimulus locations. Just because doing so results in the sale or placement of X number of animals doesn't make it right. Or does it? For exhausted shelters or rescuers with too many animals who seek immediate relief, offering animals in any public venue that results in any adoption is the right answer. That's the moment in which they live. But for those who take a bigger view, this solution looks more like part of the problem. Undoubtedly, those with both orientations could summon support and supporters for their views. In this age of social media, they probably even could muster a rally or march to support their opinions. As I worked on this podcast, I kept coming back to something I learned in an ethics course years ago. Just because something is legal doesn't make it ethical. And just because it's ethical doesn't mean it's legal. This was coupled with two equally disturbing statements about morality. One is that you cannot legislate morality. The second was, if a moral consensus exists among a population regarding a subject, you don't need laws to ensure compliance. Current legislation tells us that no moral consensus exists regarding what constitutes humane and inhumane treatment of companion animals. But that's not really news. Ethicists have been saying this for years.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.